Good morning. Last week we looked at the first book that Joel recommended and a chapter in that book, and the book is called Living the Infinite Way. He recommended after that book that you take Practicing the Presence. And Practicing the Presence has a wonderful chapter in it, Chapter 4, called The Infinite Nature of Individual Being. Now, I am constantly amazed as I go back through these earlier writings to discover that the entire message of the Infinite Way was there the whole time, as you will see as we enter into this chapter. This, I feel, is one of the most important chapters of this book, The Infinite Nature of Individual Being. And he starts it with a story. You've probably heard the story before, but it bears listening to again. There is an old, old story about a great spiritual teacher who knocked at the gates of heaven for admission into paradise. After some time, God came to the door and inquired, "Who is there? Who knocks?" To this query came the confident response, "It is I." "Sorry, very sorry, there is no room in heaven. Go away. You will have to come back some other time." The good man, surprised at the rebuff, went away puzzled. After several years spent in meditating and pondering over this strange reception, he returned and knocked again at the gate. He was met with the same question and gave a similar response. Once again, he was told that there was no room in heaven. It was completely filled at that time. In the years, here we have more years, in the years that passed, the teacher went deeper and deeper within himself, meditating and pondering. See, in the first part we said after several years, and in this part we have in the years that passed. And finally he says, after a long period of time had elapsed, so we're looking at roughly years and years and years after this first discovery that there's no room. So after a long period of time had elapsed, he knocked at the gates of heaven for a third time. Again, God asked, "Who is there?" This time his answer was, "Thou art." And the gates opened wide as God said, "Come in. There never was room for me and thee." Now we read that story and we have ourselves a little chuckle and we're just... it's such a cute little story. That's how the ego sees it. But I submit to you, in this story is the answer to all of life's problems. In this story is the answer to every question you've ever asked. In this story is the way, the truth, and the life. If you have ears to hear, and you don't see it, it's just a cute little story. But at any rate, on the next page, he says very plainly, there is not God and you. There is only God, expressed, manifested as individual being. We are outside of heaven with no hope of ever gaining entrance to it as long as we believe that we have a self apart from God. And so there you have it. You can just study that paragraph there and put away all the other books and talks and tapes and meditate on that and the story that preceded it until you come to the deep inner realization that there's no person sitting in your seat. There is only God. So I submit to you that in this early talk, which was transformed into a book, into a chapter in a book, Joel was telling those that had ears to hear, you must impersonalize yourself. He says, through the ages, duality has separated us from our good, but it is a sense of duality, not duality, because there is no duality. Oneness is not something we bring about. Oneness is a state of being. It's already a state of being, but not a state of that human being. And so now he wants to give you something to look at. He says, take a glass tumbler. Where does the outside end and where does the inside begin? And if you don't have a tumbler, you can take a shot glass, you can take a mason jar, something without a handle, and look at it. Where does the outside end and the inside begin? Are not the outside and the inside of this tumbler one and the same piece of glass? Does not the outside of the tumbler perform one function and the inside another? When it becomes clear to us, now this is not an intellectual exercise. This is something you have to enter into in a meditation. The same way that you look at your feet and say, am I in these feet or are these feet mine? And you travel up the body. You remember? He gave us that. And now he's giving us this. And when it becomes clear to us that the outside and the inside are one, we can perhaps catch a glimpse of our relationship with God. There is no such thing as God and man. Now, I don't know what that does for you, but I turn that toward myself and I say, okay, what is he saying? There's no such thing as God and Bill. And you would say there's no such thing as God and Joe. There's no such thing as God and Susan. There's no such thing as God and Dorothy. Well, that brings it a little closer to home, doesn't it? It's kind of earth-shattering. It makes one very uncomfortable. He says, God is our invisible self. We are the expression of that God. We are God. That's what he's saying. God is the creative principle, the source of the activity, the law of our being. And our being is God in manifestation. We as individuals receive our life, law, cause, substance, reality, and continuity from the infinite invisible. And that invisible activity appears visibly as the harmony of our being. All that God is, we are. All that this inner self is that which is manifest as my individual being and as yours. Now, we're going to find out in this chapter that he's not saying all that God is, me, the human being, is. He's not even saying all that God is, me, the human being, is one with. No, there's something else happening here. Listen. God is no respecter of persons. God is one. The degree of our demonstration is the degree of our awareness of this relationship. Now, if a person believes that he has a quality, nature, this is good or bad, or a characteristic of his own, he has set up a sense of limitation which separates him from the infinity of his demonstration. When he sets aside the belief that he has qualities, activities, or characteristics of his own, and realizes that it is God itself, his inner self, that is appearing outwardly, and that it is this inner selfhood that has and possesses all the qualities, activities, and characteristics of his being, in that moment he has begun to die daily. This is the meaning of Paul's statement, I die daily. And I can remember when I first started to contemplate and ponder this principle. I remember pondering these principles right here, sitting in my chair and thinking, what is he saying? Does he mean that? Does he really mean that? Do I really have to impersonalize myself? Do I really have to die completely? And then I looked at, okay, so he says that all evil which finds an outlet through me, whether it's selfishness, self-seeking, self-centeredness, anger, or fear, all evil that finds an outlet through me is not a person. No, he teaches us very plainly we must impersonalize. And so, this evil that is temporarily manifesting through me is not a person. It's an impersonal world belief, or a series of universal beliefs. And they are totally impersonal, without a person. Now, on the good side, I have no qualities. The person has no qualities of good. The love, the sharing, the teaching, healing, all of that is God flowing through. It's impersonal Christ. See, it has nothing to do with a person. And he says, that this is the meaning of Paul's statement, I die daily. I of myself am nothing. There is no person with these qualities. This is impersonal Christ, impersonal God, impersonal Spirit flowing through. So, if on the negative side this is impersonal world belief, and if on the positive side this is impersonal God, where is the person? You see? When you really practice impersonalization, you're forced to impersonalize yourself. Says Joel, we must die to every suggestion that we are or have something of ourselves, and that's good or bad. You see, if you believe that you're critical at times, or you believe that you're really empathetic towards others, if you believe that you're a very bright individual, or you think you're kind of forgetful and stupid sometimes, both of these sides of the equation equal out. There's no person here. None of those qualities or traits attributed to this person are real. We must die to every suggestion that we are or have something of ourselves. We must die to the belief of health just as much as we must die to the belief of disease. I cannot tell you the amount of people that are trying to get me to help them change disease into health. The darkness and the light are both alike to thee. Spiritually, he says, there is no disease, and there is no health. To suffer from disease or enjoy good health is to have something of our own. God has neither health nor disease. God is spirit. That's one of the wisdoms, isn't it? Health or disease, what is that to thee? You must find spiritual health. Remember, something like that in the wisdoms. He says, all that we can possibly have is the Spirit of God. We rise above this pair of opposites as we realize that there is no self apart from God. Now that's one of the Buddhist sayings, Zen Buddhist sayings, neither this nor that. See, it's not health nor disease. Remember in the New Horizon, he discusses this somewhat. He talks about when you rise above both, you're not seeking to change the bad into the good. You've given up that belief. Then you're ready to rise into a spiritual universe. And this is what we're talking about. We rise above the pairs of opposites. We realize that there is no self apart from God. God's self is the only self. Neither rich nor poor, neither sick nor well, neither young nor old, neither live nor dead. See, not this nor that. It is a state of immortality, eternal being, unchanging, infinite in its forms and appearances. To acknowledge no self apart from God is the meaning of the Master's command to deny oneself. It is God which appears outwardly as you or as me. God is our being. Now, I want to read you something. I'm not putting anybody down here. I'm just showing you the principle. Now, we just read, and we are realizing that we are being instructed to impersonalize a false sense of self, or to impersonalize that person sitting in a chair. When you have completely and utterly impersonalized yourself, so that your self is not here, and you're standing in that silence, there is an inner movement. There is another self. That self, Christ's self, God's self, moves across the face of the waters. You feel it. That is God, your inner self, your real self. Now, I received this letter this week, and it says, I recently took early retirement. I live in this state at present. I mean, I'm not going to tell you the state, but it's one of the states. But I want to sell my house so I can actually move to a place where I can get more spiritual practice. In May this year, I accepted an offer. They wanted to move in June. The house was not sold, so they asked me to extend the time to July. Their house is still not sold, and the deal is off with them. Can you help me with the sale of the house? If you can, what are your fees, and so on and so forth? Now, just knowing what we're studying here, this impersonalizing self, what do you suppose my answer was? I have no idea how to sell a house. I'm not a realtor. What you need is a realtor. But I did not answer that way. I said, I cannot help you. And that's all I said. I am not a realtor. I'm not a marriage counselor. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a physician. I'm not a surgeon. I'm not a financial advisor. All that I have to offer is this ability to be still and see and behold Christ in the midst. What it does is up to it. And by the way, after I sent that reply, I got quiet for this individual. Now, the reason why I bring that up is because he's telling you in the very second book, even for new students, that you must die to all of these opposites. Stop trying to get a spiritual practitioner or teacher or friend to change a bad appearance into a good one. However, if you want to rise above these pairs of opposites, if you're willing to go to any length, including the length of dying daily and impersonalizing this self, this person sitting in a chair, well, then we can get somewhere. We can go somewhere. Then we can work together. So he says, God, which appears outwardly, God is our being. The Word is made flesh. All flesh is formed of the Word of God. My body, therefore, is the perfect Word of God made flesh, made manifest. All right. Now we get into trouble right there. Because we say, well, didn't he just say, my body is the Word made flesh? You know, I think Joel just, he was living in this consciousness, and he, so many times, I think he gave classes and just felt and assumed that the students out in the audience were understanding, and they weren't. He had a nice group of students back in the 40s and early 50s who were hearing these talks and nodding and feeling very spiritual and trying to realize that, okay, God is the Word, my body here sitting in this chair is the Word made flesh. He just said so. And I feel very good and very spiritual, and I walk out of this room and I have a heart attack. Because that's not what he meant. And over here in 1955, in the Kahlua Study Series, he explained what he meant. And here's what he says here. Now, the word flesh, as it is referred to in the scriptures, flesh and blood cannot inherit the kingdom of God. There can be no flesh justified, no flesh shall have peace. This flesh can be translated into the word concepts. These earthly and human concepts will never be spiritual, and they will never reveal God. The body which is observed by the human senses, the body you see in the mirror, the body sitting in this chair, that self is not body. It is a universal concept of body. It has no existence except in the mind. Now, we said that last week and the week before and the week before and the week before and the week before. No illusion is ever externalized. And so this self that you're seeing sitting in a chair, male or female, rich or poor, young or old, sick or well, this body, so many pounds, so many years, is not a body. It's a universal belief. And the only existence it has is in the world mind. So that's not what he means when he says, when he goes merrily along with this talk and says, the Word is made flesh. Look, here's what he said. We're talking about God as individual being, and he says, the Word is made flesh. All flesh is formed of the Word of God. My body, therefore, is the perfect Word of God made flesh, made manifest. But he's not talking about this body that's a concept in the mind. You have another body, another self. He says the real body, the Word made, is the Word made flesh. But because the physical sense has intervened, all you can see is the concept of body. That concept must die. And that's what we're talking about in this chapter. You must impersonalize that self so there's no self here. And then standing in that emptiness of no self, which is the real silence, self God will reveal itself. So he says, that concept must die. We're still with the Kalua study. Even the concept that you entertain of yourself must die, for that concept can never know God. You see? As you entertain a concept of yourself as man or woman, as sinful, sickly, or even as good and charitable and benevolent, that concept of yourself must die until you become aware. I am that I am. When that realization comes, your old concept of yourself has died. You have fulfilled Paul's statement. You must die daily. You must be reborn of the Spirit. And over here, he says it this way. He says, it is our consciousness, God consciousness, which is our individual consciousness. That is the law, the cause, the activity, and the substance of the body. But not the body you see in the mirror. No, he says, from the moment that we were conceived as human, we have been under material and mental laws. Laws of food, weather, climate, time, and space. Always, as human beings, we are under some law. These are really universal beliefs, but they act as law until we consciously realize our immunity. We are not the victims. We are spiritual identity, not mortal beings. Now look, this is as plain as you can get. This is a half a sentence that you must take inside yourself until you have realization. We are not mortal beings, we are spiritual identity. Or rather, he said, we are spiritual identity, not mortal beings. Mortality is a myth. You see what he's getting at here? Again, back to the Kailua. The concept must die. Even the concept that you entertain of yourself must die, for that concept can never know God. It can never know reality. It's only as you refrain from judging by appearances, and through a transformation of your consciousness. Be therefore transformed through the renewing of your mind. Let God define what you are and who you are. You are the Word made flesh, but that flesh is an infinite individuality, an infinite body that is eternal. See, he says, flesh beheld through the senses is the universal concept about our real identity. But flesh apprehended spiritually in meditation is our spiritual form of body and of being. God individualizing itself as your being. Again, that which you behold with the senses is a universal concept of flesh. It's changeable. And it must die. It can die either through acceptance of the world's judgment and belief in age and disease and death, or it can die through a transformation of consciousness. You can bring about its death yourself in a painless way. You see this? As you realize, he says, the nature of the Word made flesh, you drop the mortal concept of flesh and ultimately find yourself with a diseaseless, ageless, and painless body. You will die to the flesh through transformation. It will appear, outwardly, it will appear as an improved concept, but it will not be. It will be your realization made manifest. Okay? If you live by that which has externalized form, that's the concept, and the concept must die. So he says it over and over and over again. If I think that there is a me and God, I lose the demonstration. When I know God as my being, myself, then I know I myself am the law, the life, and the truth. It's all about right identity. So, what is he saying in the Kailua Study Series? He is saying, you must impersonalize the person. Tom, Tim, Lewis, Mary, Susan, Martha. These are universal concepts, impersonal concepts, having no person. They are concepts entertained in the mind. They exist only in the world mind. But in your meditation, as you impersonalize that, and you come to see that any appearance of evil is impersonal, universal belief, and any appearance of good, of personal good, is impersonal. Because the only good, the only love, the only spirituality, the only grace, is impersonal God. And so there is no person. And now, rather than trying to improve a universal concept, let me drop all that. Let me be still. Let me step right out of a personal sense of self. Let me impersonalize that self so that there is no self here, only God. Let me follow the instructions that Joel is giving us. God's self is the only self. And then in that stillness, God reveals itself. There's an inner movement. There's a shift, a transformation. Another self comes forward right out of the tomb into which I thought it was buried. Yes, without thought, that other self flows up and out. And I feel it. And I recognize, and I have the inner realization. God is. It's not a thought now, it's not a concept in a book, it's the inner realization. It's real. To realize is to make real. And that's what happens in this meditation. When this self in a chair is totally impersonalized, there's no more self here. There's an emptiness, a vacuum. And then comes the movement. That movement, that seeing, sensing, knowing aright, that's realization. Now, he says, back in the infinite nature of individual being and practicing the presence, it is our consciousness, God consciousness, which is our individual consciousness. That is the law, the cause, the activity, and the substance of the body. But now we recognize which body it's talking about. When you sit in that meditation and you have that inner realization and you feel that movement of spirit, that spiritual body is the body he's talking about. The word is made flesh. It's the substance of spiritual body. And as Herb on the Mystical Principles blog today has posted a talk that Herb Fitch gave about living in that spiritual body and functioning through that spiritual body. So, says Joel, from the moment that we were conceived, we have been under material mental laws. Yes, always as human beings, we are under some law. But we are spiritual identity, not mortal beings. Our true identity is consciousness, spirit, soul. We are not subject to the laws of matter. God is infinite law, and this being true, the only law is the law of God, or the grace of God. Now, he says, if this realization, which we just talked about, you have within, if this were of great enough depth, we would automatically rule out of our lives all physical discords. But because in most cases it is merely an intellectual acceptance, it's not effective in our experience. You see, we understood these things years ago, didn't we? But we understood them intellectually. We did not understand them. We did not have an inner realization of them. So, he says, that's not enough. You can pass the test on all of this. Okay, I know what my true identity is. It's the Word made flesh. And the Word made flesh is an invisible spirit within. It's another self, another body. And I pass the test 100%. But all I have is an intellectual acceptance of it. I have no inner feel of it. It's not moving through me. So he says, let us make it effective by a specific act of consciousness. And we've heard that before, a specific act of consciousness. And what is that specific act? That specific act is impersonalizing self, yourself. You must impersonalize yourself. You must consciously erase it so there's no self here. That's not real difficult. That's not very easy to do. That's real difficult, isn't it? Paul's dying daily. So, now he gives us a little treatment. But this treatment, remember, is the letter. This is the intellectual acceptance he's talking about. And he says, Spirit is my true identity. I have now come out and become separate. I am no longer of the world, even though in it. And therefore I am not subject to the world's laws. None of these human beliefs is binding upon the child of God, the offspring of Spirit, which I am. God is the source of my being. God is the activity and the law of my being, and I consciously accept that. I am not subject to man-made laws. I am subject only to grace, and thy grace is sufficient for me. So you see, he's had his little treatment here, but he does not go into the second part here. And we know, those of us that have studied together for a couple of years now, that there's a second part. After the treatment, there must come the second part. And it's the second part which is the important part. So what is it? Let's go back and refresh our minds. We'll look again at the Kailua study series. Now, he says, the moment you know this, what? Well, the realization that we just had. That letter of truth, where we are sitting in, where you're knowing Spirit is my true identity. I've come out and become separate. I'm the offspring of God, Spirit, which I am. And God is the source of my being. I'm not subject to laws. Thy grace is my sufficiency. The moment we know this, and we're done knowing that, here comes something, the second part. He says, it's a big step we're going to take right now. He says, don't respond to an appearance of error or to an appearance of good with a statement of truth. Don't do that from this moment. See, here's the second part, which was introduced to the students clearly, plainly, simply in the Kailua study series. So let's read the chapter. Don't respond to an appearance of error with a statement of truth. Don't do that from this moment on. Let the truth as you know it, which now constitutes your consciousness, let it be satisfied. You already know the truth. You knew it yesterday and the day before, so there's no need to repeat it today. But instantly get to the center of your being. Get in here as fast as you can and wait for the Father to utter itself, declare itself, or reveal itself. What is he saying? After you know, have this little letter of truth, this little treatment, be still. Drop all that. Get in here and wait. That's the second part. If necessary, he says, grit your teeth and wait a second or two, and you will see something will take place within you. That's the movement. It doesn't make any difference if it doesn't happen the first time. It will happen very quickly as you train yourself not to affirm or deny, but immediately close your mind, open your ears, and wait, and let God do it within you. Let the Christ come into manifestation. See, there's a rightful function of your mind, not as a power, but as an avenue of awareness. All the time that we were doing these treatments over the years, we were trying to use the mind as a power. I'm going to know the truth, and the truth will manifest as harmony. And I'm trying to do all that with my mind. No. No, he's teaching us here that that's not the way. Yes, know the truth for a little while, have your little treatment, but then be still and wait, wait, wait for this inner movement. Because the real function of the mind is not to be knowing truth. The real function of the mind is to impersonalize itself so it's no longer there. It's standing. And it's an avenue of awareness of the inner movement of another self. You see that? Now, he says, this is why we contemplate God and the things of God. You say it's a mental activity. Yes, it is. It's a mental activity which enables us to keep the impurities of the mind out and allow the mind to be a useful function as a state of awareness. In other words, these treatments, like the one we just had here in Practicing the Present, Spirit is my true identity, I have now come out and become separate, knowing that truth with your mind is only a way to quiet the mind and go beyond the mind. That's what it was there for. It was never the place where you were supposed to stop. Well, I've known this now with my mind. I've known it intellectually, and it gave me a little warm, fuzzy feeling, so now I can go about my business. No. No. In most cases, it is merely an intellectual acceptance. It's not effective in our experience. But, he says, let us make it effective by a specific act of consciousness. And that act is, after your little treatment, stand still and wait. He says, we are the ones who have to open out a way, and we do it by refraining from taking thought. We do it by waiting until God's thought comes through. See that? So, if we persist in refusing to take thought, in refusing to use the letter of truth only, and if we were to create this inner vacuum for the experience of the Christ, it will not be long until you experience the Christ. Once you have experienced it, you've felt the movement, into your awareness comes another self. He says, after that, the rest is up to you. You can neglect it. You can achieve it occasionally. You can become so fascinated with it that you live consciously with that, repeating it over and over and over again until eventually you don't have to do it consciously anymore. It, this other self, takes over your life and it lives your life. Do you see? Do you hear? What is he saying in this chapter, this simple little chapter for beginners in practicing the presence, this infinite nature of individual being? He is giving you the tools to impersonalize yourself. Stand ye still, and behold, I come quickly. This I is yourself. So he says, let us take every detail of our life, our body, our food, our business, our home, and consciously make this transition. And he gives another treatment. I have meat to eat that ye know not of. I am the bread of life. He that cometh to me shall never hunger, and he that believeth on me shall never thirst. From this infinite storehouse, I feed my body. I manage my business. I supply my pocketbook. I maintain my relationship with everyone. God is my individual consciousness. It is the substance of my life. It embodies all good. It becomes a law unto my experience, a wellspring of life gushing forth into life eternal. God fulfills itself as our individual being. But it's not enough to read these pretty words in the book and close the book and go on living a personal life, now is it? We see the difference. If, he says, if we can lose concern for ourselves, God takes over and God fulfills itself. And that's what we just read in the Kailua Study Series. You reach a point where it takes over. What it? Well, you don't know. You can't know intellectually. You can say, it, my real self, my God self, it means nothing. But if you will go beyond these treatments and have the second part to your meditation where you wait until it takes over that meditation, then you will feel the movement of another self, of a spiritual body. Then you will know, and it remains with you, how often you will practice this. Will you take his 12 to 30 times a day until you reach the point where Christ liveth your life? Now this sentence here is just fabulous, absolutely fabulous. It's another cone. This earth is only the earth in proportion as we see it as a place other than heaven. Isn't that great? It's the seeing that needs changing, not the place. Earth becomes heaven to the degree in which we let God fulfill itself as our individual experience. Now that is such an important line. Earth becomes heaven if you let God fulfill itself as individual experience, existence. There is only one self, and that one is God. Now that sentence right there should have really caused your thinking to come to a standstill. Who is this person in this chair, then? Which one is true, the person in this chair, or this statement that there's only one self and that one is God? See, God is not appearing as this person, because this person will die. Someday it will no longer exist. So if God were this person, then God would be dying. That cannot be true. No. The flesh you see in the mirror is not the flesh of which God appears. That which is made is not made of that which doth appear. You see? There is only one self, and that one is God. We entertain a false sense of that spiritual self, and we call it Bill, Mary, or Henry, and then we're concerned about Bill, Mary, or Henry. However, once we give up concern for the human sense of self, and you see, once you impersonalize it, you give up concern for it, and realize that we exist as God fulfilling itself as an individual way, in an individual way, and the responsibility is on his shoulders, well, we relinquish the false sense of responsibility, and then God fulfills its destiny as individual being. See, but this is an experience that takes place in meditation. It's not an intellectual agreement. Oh, okay, yeah, I'm going to give up concern for myself, and yes, God is, God's grace is my sufficiency, God's grace is my sufficiency, God's grace is my sufficiency. No. That's not it. We have an inner transformation. We take into meditation every facet of life. And we impersonalize it so that we stand still in the silence of no person. Then we see the impersonal life, God itself. We feel its movement. We know the Word made flesh because we feel that inner spiritual flesh. And then it fulfills itself and appears outwardly as a harmonious state of being. He says, to the world it may appear that we are now healthy, happy, and successful or prosperous, but we know better. Only God is healthy, happy, successful, or prosperous, and the good the world is beholding is God fulfilling itself. Now we can relax because all that God is permitted to flow into being without the word I interfering. He says, we are told to have that mind in us which was also in Christ Jesus. We already have it, but it is necessary to attain a realization of it, or to be in that inner place without a personal self, and to feel, commune with, hear direction flowing out from that impersonal mind. God is infinite consciousness, and God is our mind and our consciousness. Therefore, it is from your consciousness and from mine that the issues of life must come. The activity of supply, the activity of health, harmony, and wholeness. There is no far-off God. The activity of truth in our consciousness appears as the miracle. I, in the midst of thee, am mighty. You see, but it must be an inner realization, not an intellectual agreement. When you know by inner experience the activity of spirit in consciousness, then you can say, that I in the midst of me is mighty. I am is God. This I is not a personal sense of self which walks the earth calling itself Bill, Mary, or Henry. No, it comes as a gentle whisper. I and thee and thou and me, we are one. I in the midst of thee am mighty. When we hear that spoken in our inner ear, we know that that I is God, closer than breathing, nearer than hands and feet. It is a presence that will never leave nor forsake us. All the discords and inharmonies of the world come from a personal sense of I. See, but if you blot out that personal sense of I, if you die daily, if you impersonalize as an inner experience, then what you have remaining is the impersonal Christ, and that is harmonious being. I am nothing of myself. The Father is that which I am. This is the Master's transcendental teaching. Yes, you're transcending out of the tomb of a false self. As human beings, we place our reliance on persons and things in the outer world. But that man who has his being in Christ places his entire reliance on spirit and trusts it to bring forth all that is necessary in the outer realm. Whenever faced with some need, let us realize spirit as the source of fulfillment. And then let us go about our business taking such human steps as may be necessary at the moment. But letting the spirit, the infinite invisible, be the law, the substance, the cause, and the harmonious maintainer and sustainer. In short, we make no change in our present mode of living, except as the Spirit itself may pick us up and direct us into new activity. The sense of personal responsibility and the fear of what man can do to us drop away. I in the midst of me is mighty. I go before me to make the crooked places straight. It is the conscious remembrance. So you're practicing something within throughout the day and night. It's the conscious remembrance of the I, the infinite nature of individual being, which must be continuously practiced, not as an intellectual memory. No, but by these periods of quiet in which you impersonalize self and realize invisible spiritual self. Fulfillment comes about only as you and I are able to relinquish the personal sense of self, that God may fulfill itself. Let us be ever alert. Spiritual fulfillment means God fulfilling itself. So, he says, let God be the only presence. Now, I do not know how much plainer you can make it. Here, in the beginning book, the second book, which he recommends after Living the Infinite Way, this book called Practicing the Presence, the fourth chapter called The Infinite Nature of Individual Being, he very quietly, very gently, so much so that I did not even realize it in the early days, he simply suggests that you completely, totally annihilate yourself. Die to a false sense of self. Impersonalize any person. There is no person here. But do it in such a way that thought comes to a standstill. Personal thought. And in the silence that remains when there's no person here, the impersonal self steps forward. You feel its movement within. You feel the flow of your spiritual self. And you feel the spiritual body. This is the flesh. This is the Word made flesh that dwells among us. And we behold its glory, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. This is the only self. And through the experience of the self, when you return to the well often enough, eventually there comes a moment in which this self, God's self, takes over your existence. And now God is really living you. And now Christ liveth itself. And now you have a new heaven and a new earth. And now you have a new self. But no one knows its name except for you who have received it. Isn't it funny how these chapters have different layers to them depending on the consciousness that's looking at them? I find it absolutely fascinating that from the very beginning, Joel was tipping his hand, showing his cards. He was revealing his consciousness for those who had eyes to see and ears to hear. And so I find that going back and looking at these early chapters to be helpful, to be a confirmation of the work that we must do. And I invite you, my brothers, my sisters, in oneness, I invite you to walk this way. Follow me, that invisible self, right into the center of your being. Know that I am always here to know the truth. to know that self. Where you appear is only that self. That I can help with. Anything else is something I cannot help you with. So thank you for listening today. I love you all. And may this self bless you throughout eternity. Thank you.